Spring Break, or The Peacock. Written by Win Azin Silks, narrated by Rhea314. Fandom, 9 World Series by Victoria Goddard. Rating, mature, no archive warning supply. Relationship, Cleofer Kip Madang, Fitzroy Angersell. The trip started off well enough. Not that Kip had been able to summon much enthusiasm for the prospect, but Basil and Demeter had both been very insistent. And there was another month until term started, and really anything was better than staying in Gorjo City, where every street and every second tree held a uniquely painful memory. There, the cafe they had gone to celebrate passing their first semester at university. There, the bench upon which Gilly had kissed him for the first time. There, the stretch of beach where Gilly had told him that, of course, she cared for him, cared tremendously, but hadn't it been just that little bit easier when they were just friends? The sea air had helped a bit. It was easy to lose himself in the rhythm of work and of waves below his feet, the heat of the sun and the steady guidance of the stars. And the City of Blue Doors, which he had never visited before, while perhaps not quite as splendid as the guidebook said, the jewel of Southern Cavanor, was very fine for somewhere that wasn't the Vangaveave. But on the fourth day, Kip woke up feeling wrong. The heat rested on his skin in an itching, miasmic stickiness, and the breezes from off the water were not the breezes he knew. There was a crawling restlessness upon him, the kind that had once driven him to petty larceny and picking fights with boys twice his size. He hadn't had a proper fight in years. The want of it buzzed in his bones and the roots of his teeth. He went along with his cousin's suggested activities for the day without argument, trying not to let his sullenness show. They visited the market in the Great Cave Network that had in early Ostendalen days been the heart of a smuggling operation spanning 3 worlds. Demeter's choice. Then took lunch at a waterside cafe beneath waterfalls of trailing wisteria. Basil's pick. And then onwards to the Museum of Decorative Arts, which was ostensibly another of Basil's selections, but had quite obviously been chosen for Kip's benefit. Kip stared moodily at the nacre-inlaid dower chest depicting the assumption of Emperor Aurelius Magnus by his divine ancestors, an object he would have, under any other circumstances, have taken much interest in, and thought of Gilly telling him that he was just too romantic for her, really. And after this, I was thinking we could dress up as priest wizards and plunder the central temple and set ourselves up as the robber kings of Kavanduru, Demeter suggested. Whatever you like, Kip said vaguely, remembering. No, she didn't mean that kind of romantic. It was just that Gilly was a small and practical kind of person when it came down to it, and wanted a small and practical life, whereas Kip, well. Basil sighed. There looked to be a goodish sort of tavern along the southern harbor. Let's have a drink. Kip thought he would have preferred Demeter's plan, which was Gilly would no doubt say precisely the sort of thing she was talking about. But he was determined not to make himself disagreeable. Behold him, agreeing. And so to the tavern they went. Now Kip had finished a second pint of deeply uninspiring local beer and was nursing his third, aware that he was brooding and not much able to make himself stomp. He was being too much again. Probably he was ruining the trip. Probably Demeter and Basil would be getting along much better without him, just as Gilly probably was back in Gorjo City. Probably he should just finish this drink and then he would... Which was about the point at which a tangle of limbs and swirling midnight blue fabric collided with his chair. Kip's arm jerked. The remainder of his pint, which he had been raising to his lips, bypassed his mouth entirely, taking a more direct and considerably stickier route to his abdomen. "Oh dear," someone exclaimed. "I'm terribly sorry. Is your shirt ruined? I'm sure I have a spare if you'll allow me a moment." "It's fine," Kip said brusquely, pulling off his tunic and unfastening the neck of his shirt. It was too hot for this much clothing anyway. He had a moment of keenly missing his grass skirt. He glanced up to find his assailant standing stock still before him. The man was very clearly some kind of Velio noble. Fancy clothes, aristocratic features, topped with an admittedly unaristocratic riot of curls, but Kip was not feeling particularly charitable. Or, truth be told, wholly sober. He felt justified in ignoring this discrepancy. And the poshest accent Kip had ever heard. He was also staring openly, which did little to put Kip in better humor. Kip fixed him with a warning glower. The toff returned a smile. Some people might have called that smile charming. Kip was not one of them. "You must allow me to buy you a new drink." "Oh, you'll buy it," said a tiny, striking woman Kip had not previously noticed. She was standing at the toff's side, where she had presumably, until now, been subsumed by his aura of dazzling poshness. Kip couldn't tell if she was a toff, too, or part of some kind of entourage. "I will arrange for its purchase," said the toff grandly, and turned to a nearby table, raising his voice. The tiny woman elbowed him in the ribs. "My dear," the toff called, without missing a beat. Another woman of pink cheek and round face rose and came over. "There's been something of a mishap." "He tripped," the tiny woman said. The toff waved this away. "My feet momentarily found themselves out of harmony with the floor." The pink-cheeked woman sighed. "I told you the cape was a mistake." "The point is," the toff said, raising his voice a little, "my new friend needs a drink." "Of course he does," the new woman said, with a wry pull of her mouth and a speaking glance, and trudged off towards the bar. Kip was incensed. He could feel it rise inside him, the outrage swelling, as if to the pull of the tide on his own now distant shores. Familiar, welcome. He was not this man's friend. And was he meant to be impressed that this preening aristo peacock was too self-important to buy a drink for himself? He felt for his poor attendants. Behind him, Basil, having apparently assessed the situation with all the accuracy of long experience, said, "Actually, we were just leaving." "Oh, but we're only just getting acquainted," the peacock lamented. "I don't even know your name." "You haven't told me yours," Kip pointed out. His tone was not polite. The peacock flashed him a dazzling grin. "Well, some people might have found it dazzling anyway," and put back his shoulders. "I," he said, in musical rolling tones, "am..." The short woman elbowed him again, harder this time. "Incognito," the peacock finished, folding a protective hand over his ribs. Kip regarded him narrowly. Then, ignoring Basil's hissed, "Kip," and Demeter's warning, "Don't," he got to his feet. He looked the peacock up and down, well, more up and up, but with a consciously insolent tilt to his head that carried, he hoped, much the same effect. He was taller than Kip by a head, but rangy and narrow-limbed. Kip could take him. It probably wouldn't even be hard. "I think," said Kip, planting his feet a little farther apart, rolling his shoulders back and limbering his neck. "What you are is a feckless upper-crust cast-off come to slum it for an evening down here with us peasants. Is that right?" The feckless upper-crust cast-off put his head to one side as if considering this. "I object to the phrase slum it," he said. "Has anyone ever told you you have a lovely voice? Such a musical accent, do you sing?" Kip took a deep breath, shrugged off the hand that one of his cousins, he couldn't bother to check which, had placed on his shoulder, and proceeded to tell this man exactly what he thought of the hereditary aristocracy. Perhaps the drink had loosened his tongue, because his speech went on for quite a while. Long enough, at least, for the short woman, who had gone very still when Kip first got to his feet, hand falling not quite casually to her belt, to relax again, a look of grudging admiration stealing onto her face. And then, when she glanced up at the peacock to say, "Oh," in a flattened kind of voice, and returned to the table. Long enough for the other woman to return, because when Kip, who had found himself getting a little scratchy, paused to clear his throat, the peacock thrust a drink at him with such energy he nearly spilled it again. Kip accepted it, took a swig, and swung onto a tangent about the exploitation of labor, so pointed that the other woman apparently felt moved to interject, "I'm not actually his servant, you know. He's just not allowed to handle the money." The peacock hushed her frantically. "Do go on," he told Kip, leaning forwards with an expression of such starry-eyed raptness that Kip quite lost his train of thought. He realized that most of the tavern had turned to watch, and that the peacock had somehow acquired a stool, upon which he was perched with a precarity that seemed almost intentional, given how easily his feet could have reached the floor if he had bothered to put them there. "Well," Kip said, feeling a little put on the spot, "that's it, more or less." "Marvelous," the peacock told him. "Unparalleled, a tour de force. Have you ever considered writing all that down? Or, how do you feel about poetry?" The last was said with a slow, devastating smile. Kip realized, for perhaps the first time, that the man's eyes were the gold of new valiance. The other woman threw the man a look of mild reproach. "Are you sure? He does seem very young." "I'm 19, Kip objected automatically. "He is 19 to... The other woman put up her hands. "Well then, I stand corrected. He's really not who you think he is," she added to Kip with a smile, and returned to her table. It was quite a large table, Kip realized, filled by a group notable for its diversity of builds and coloring. There were also, crucially, 9 of them, 10 including the toff in front of him. Those faces he could see looked mostly about a decade or so older than Kip himself, although one woman might have been older still. She also, Kip couldn't help but notice, only had one arm. And the man next to her was certainly broad and muscular enough to do something physical for a living, something like, say, smithing. And the woman next to him was... Well, she was currently turned a little away, speaking with a short woman from before, but even from this angle, Kip could make out some of the luscious curves he had ever seen outside of artwork of Ani. The short woman shot Kip a disgruntled look, then murmured something to her. They were built very differently, but with a similar coppery tone to their skin, and both with thick, waving hair that gleamed like obsidian glass, so it really wasn't impossible that they could be sisters. The curvy woman turned to follow the shorter woman's gaze. She met Kip's eyes and smiled and... Yes, Kip thought, with a dizzying rush of vertigo. Yes, he could see how she might be considered the most beautiful woman in the 9 worlds, which would mean... Kip? Basil said, with an urgent tug at his sleeve. Which would mean... Kip. That deep, ostentatiously accented voice said with evident relish, "Delighted to make your acquaintance." Kip turned slowly back to the face, the... not a peacock. So much not a peacock that he had actually originated the term as used to describe a showy and decorative but ultimately ineffectual gentleman of fashion, because he had written the poem in which that term was introduced, because he was... "I'm sorry I can't give you my name," the man said. Kip realized with alarm that the man had somehow scooted quite a bit closer since Kip had last looked his way, stool and all. His knee was nearly brushing against Kip's thigh. "But I promise I'm not a... what was it? Ah, yes, a paternalistic good-for-naught whose sole vocation is to claim ownership of everything which is produced by the labors of the working man. At least, I hope I'm not. Working person, Kip corrected, feeling a little breathless. His pulse was racing. The man, this, he was so close. Not man. The man hummed agreement. You're so passionate, he said throatily. Behind Kip, someone, possibly Demeter, choked. What else are you passionate about? Kip felt himself sway. Towards the voice, perhaps, or away from it, but either way, simply caught in its thrall. Well, he said, to Fitzroy Angersell. I have some very strong opinions on the subject of postal reform. Your hair smells absolutely divine. Fitzroy Angersell. Fitzroy Angersell purred from where he sat twined around Basil's favorite cousin like a particularly wriggly strangler fig. What do you use? Kip's face flushed a ruddy magenta that no amount of wine had ever succeeded in bringing out in him before, but he did manage to say valiantly, Soap. Marvelous. Fitzroy Angersell said. It smells like gardenia, and the air just before Midsummer's daybreak. I shall put it in a song. Someone who might or might not be Godarvid the Tall groaned faintly. Worse than that tavern boy in Yadoan. I promise you he does know what soap is, a voice said. Basil jumped a little and turned to find the woman he was nearly certain was Julinar of the Sea, had pulled up her chair next to his, and was watching Fitzroy and Kip. Those names together. Basil thought he might never get used to it, not if it took him 1,000 years. With an expression of fascination and trepidation, Basil had to assume was similar to his own. Kip had certainly jumped and blushed upon realizing this woman's probable identity, which was the least of what Basil would have expected, had he been capable of expecting any of this, which, decidedly, he hadn't been. But he also hadn't given her more than a passing glance since. Although, to be fair, Fitzroy had given him very few opportunities to look at anyone else. If Basil had had to predict which member of the Red Company Kip was most likely to rebound with, on what was clearly becoming a staggeringly successful, hey, let's try and take your mind off that breakup trip, he wouldn't have chosen Fitzroy Angersell. Although, to be fair, Fitzroy's considerable efforts hadn't gotten him much nearer to the actual physicality of rebound yet. I had assumed as much, he said to probably Julinar, now. Is your friend... cousin. Cousin always so... oblivious? Basil supplied. Yes, famously. Enough so that Demeter had already gone off to talk the practicalities of adventuring with presumably Maseo Umret, and Phaleron the less obviously blue than advertised. Basil was forced to admit that the Cousin Kip show, as some members of the wider family had dubbed it, while entertaining, was not exactly a novelty. But this was Fitzroy Angersell. He doesn't seem bothered by it, Julinar of the Sea said thoughtfully. Or I might have intervened, but I'm also not quite sure he's noticed. Oh, almost certainly not. Really? Julinar of the Sea's voice acquired a pitch of fascination that Basil found himself remarkably in sympathy with. Not even when my friend said that there weren't enough chairs and your cousin offered to stand and my friend said no need and sat in his lap.
Kip's always been quite tactile with his friends.
Or the thing with the cup, or the bit when my friend insisted he needed to do a taste test to make sure I'd gotten the drink right.
Basil blinked. That really happened. It wasn't that he was given to hallucination or overactive imagination, but simply that the sight of Fitzroy Angersell hollowing his cheeks around a finger he'd just swiped across Cousin Kip's collarbone seemed entirely too improbable to exist in an orderly universe.
"Oh yes," Julinar of the Sea said grimly.
"Is he always so..."
"This is the worst I've seen him in years," Julinar said. "Of course, he's not usually allowed to get this far. Usually people tell him no or yes. And then if there's any further escalation, at least there's a closed door in the way."
Basil shrugged, feeling a little helpless. "Kip doesn't really think about sex. Not unless you remind him."
"He's not averse?"
"No, I don't think so. He has had lovers. Well, one, at least. They broke up a few weeks ago. That's why we went on this trip. I've never known him to... I mean, he's never really talked about men like that, but he never really talked about women either. And I suppose if any man could," he added conscientiously. "I mean, he's always been a little, you know, intense. About your friend."
Julinar nodded. "A fan, I see." She dusted her hands on her skirts and said with a decisive expression, "Well, seems to me there's only one thing to be done, unless we want to sit around and watch this all night."
"Oh, stars, no."
For all their childhood play-acting, Basil had never shared Kip's grand ambitions for adventuring with the Red Company. But now that the Red Company was here, surely there were more interesting things to do than watch an amorous poet try to fuse with his cousin on an alchemical level. Julinar got to her feet and marched over to where Kip and Fitzroy were. Call it sitting. Kip was sitting anyway. Fitzroy was... Basil really didn't understand how it was possible for a human calf to be wrapped that many times around another person's leg. Maybe it was a mage thing. Fitzroy straightened as best he could at Julinar's approach. This had the effect of very nearly overbalancing him and Kip, which Kip managed to forestall by planting his unencumbered leg more firmly and catching Fitzroy around the waist. Fitzroy cooed at him, then said to Julinar, full of his dignity,
"What is it? I'm doing a thing here."
"You're bungling it," Julinar said. Fitzroy surged even more indignantly upright, forcing Kip to throw out his Fitzroy-free hand and grip the table rather than be overturned.
"I am not bungling it."
"Yes, you are." Fitzroy bounced around on Kip's lap. Basil caught his breath in sympathy at Kip's subvocal oof, and stared directly into Kip's face.
"Kip."
Then, his expression melting into something simmering, which had even Basil's stomach fluttering, and he was quite sure he wasn't into men.
"Lovely, Kip. Tell her I'm not bungling it."
"You're not," Kip said loyally, with a breathlessness that was probably more to do with supporting a 6-foot-something poet than whatever Fitzroy was attempting to inspire. Then, native love of accuracy kicking in,
"At least, I'm sure you're not, probably. It really depends what, I mean, what is it?"
Fitzroy opened his mouth, closed it, shot a bewildered look at Julinar, who rolled her eyes.
"Young man, what my friend here is trying to communicate is that he'd very much like to take you to bed."
Then, as Basil coughed pointedly,
"What, really?"
"He'd like to have sex with you. Bed optional."
"Bed preferable," Fitzroy said judiciously. "But not a requirement."
Kip was looking as if someone had hit him in the face with a frying pan.
"With me? Really?"
"Desperately," Fitzroy told him, contriving to twist around again so he and Kip were all but forehead to forehead.
"Passionately. What now?"
"Or thenabouts.
I try to be flexible, but this whole city is a bit hot for us at the moment. And not,"
with another molten smile, "just the part of it you happen to be in."
"But I'm not,"
Kip glanced around as if for rescue, then cleared his throat.
I mean, are you sure?
My dear Kip. Fitzroy reached out, detached Kip's hand from the table, and clasped it to his heart.
I burn.
Oh, Kip said. Then slowly, as if trying it out, he offered Fitzroy a smile. Fitzroy's returning grin was dazzling as the noonday sun. With careful courtesy, he raised Kip's hand to his lips.
They will sing your name from here to the farthest reaches of the Nine Worlds, I promise you.
Well, Kip said, allowing himself to be tugged to his feet.
If it's for poetry.
Your friend, Basil said as Julinar returned to him with the air of a job well done, is very bad at being incognito. I am aware, she said. Still, that should keep him occupied and out of trouble until we can figure out a way out of the city. I don't suppose, she added with a slight frown, as Fitzroy Angersell. Basil still wasn't over it. Towed Kip out of the tavern proper and up the stairs toward the bedrooms.
You've got rooms in this inn?
No, Basil said. We're just here for a drink. Why?
Neither do we, Julinar said. Then she shrugged philosophically.
Ah, well, I'm sure it'll work itself out. These things usually do.
The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed this Podfix, you're welcome to leave me feedback. I'd love to hear from you.